Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. New book this morning entitled The Short Bible, a chronological summary of the Old and New Testaments. Now, Peter, I went online and I listened to an interview. I don't normally do it, just a few minutes to pronounce your name correctly. And I said, you know, with some names, some of the publicists need to give us a pronunciation. So, cause, is it Bylsma?
Yes, it's perfect.
Okay. The links I have to go through to get people's names correct. I said, I have to find this man's name. And I'm so happy to have you with us today. You doing okay?
I'm doing great, Sharon.
Excellent. Now, you have well-traveled, seasoned writer and researcher, and certainly well-traveled 7 states, 4 countries. What are the 4 countries you went to?
I started off in the Netherlands, near The Hague. I studied there in college. I taught in a secondary school in Korea, South Korea. A few years later, I was in Malaysia helping work with refugees for a year, the boat people, the Vietnamese. And then I spent 5 years in Germany, in Frankfurt, Germany, which was a base of operations for my diplomatic work. Mm-hmm. All over, you know, Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia. Mm-hmm. So I've had about 8 years or so living overseas.
Okay. Well, I bet your perspective is different.
It is. Yeah. I don't realize it until I come home everybody else.
Yeah. Well, it just seems to me like maybe some people needed to go away and come back and realize how blessed we are. You know,
absolutely.
I'm serious. It just seems like they take so much for granted. Peter, also, you spent about a decade in Christian agencies. You've been working for some years. What did you do in the Christian agencies?
So I worked several years as an educator in a private Christian school. I then worked with refugees, both in the U.S. and overseas, with a group called World Concern, based in Seattle. I resettled refugees here in this country, and then I worked in the refugee camps, helping getting people who had come out of Vietnam mm-hmm. to get ready to come to the U.S.
Mm.
And I did that for 5 years. Eventually, I ended up working as the CEO of a nonprofit Christian group working with homeless, high-risk youth living on the streets of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So total, that was 10 years. And I was actually wanting to continue in Christian ministry, and I went to the University of Washington to get a master's degree in public administration, not business administration, mm-hmm. but public administration, mm-hmm. thinking I was going to be a leader in some type of Christian organization, and ended up getting a job working for Congress in the public sector, and spent 11 years with that organization. It was a bipartisan investigative organization, the Government Accountability Office. They basically check on the executive branch for Congress. So that took me all over the country, and including to Nashville, and then also all over the world doing investigations for both the Republicans and Democrats.
What were you in Nashville?
That would have been in the late 80s. Loved it.
It's changed a lot since then.
Well, I want to go back.
Well, it's like the tourist trap of all tourist traps now. It's like everything is for tourists here, everything. We still struggle in Nashville to hang on to some things that remind us that this is our town. But everything is, you know, looks completely different. So you need to come back and check it out, because you're going to be like, is this Nashville? That's what you're going to say when you see this place has changed so much. Anyway, Peter, when you wrote your book, The Short Bible, what thought process did you have that you wanted to tackle on shortening the Bible? And did anybody say, what? You want to do what? What was their questions in somebody's head about this?
Well, how I got to write the book was actually a confluence of several factors. One, I was coming to the end of my ninth career, and I had a few more months to go, and I was wondering, what am I going to do next? And COVID hit. And so all of a sudden, I was at home, having a lot of time on my hands for about 3 or 4 months before I was going to retire. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I got to be doing something. I got about 10 or 15 good years left, and I want to make it really count. So I kind of reflected on the things I was good at, and my background, and, you know, being a world traveler and being a Christian for 50 years, mm-hmm. and being a writer in both kind of the technical nonfiction educational journals or other kind of journals, mm-hmm. Or an investigator of weird problems or complicated problems, trying to figure out what those are and then reporting it in a concise way. When you put all those together, I thought, you know, the Bible is something I really want to know more about. It's really long. It's really complicated. I think maybe a shorter version might be easier for people to understand. Mm-hmm. And so I actually ran the idea by a few people, and every single person said, that's a great idea. And so with that encouragement, I thought, well, maybe I'll try this. And of course, the first thing I had to do is, whenever you write a book, you have to understand the whole story. Mm-hmm. So that you can write it in a way that, you know, it has a plot, it's got a beginning, it's got characters. And I wanted it to be a regular kind of book that would flow chronologically, mm-hmm. which meant I had to really understand the Bible and how it was organized or disorganized. I was jammed together. And I talked to a number of people. My parents had been in Christian ministries for more than 60 years. My dad had been a child evangelist with a group called Young Life for 30 years, and then he went overseas and he worked in Bangladesh, and it totally changed his perspective about the whole gospel thing. And he then did a lot of urban work. He's a white guy, but he became part of the Black Ministerials Association in Seattle. He just had a really different perspective, and I think when you go overseas and you live in a poor country like Bangladesh, and he did other travels too, I think he got in touch with what maybe the culture was like, you know, 2,000 years ago when Jesus was walking around on the earth. Mm-hmm. His whole perspective about ministry changed. And then it became more about social justice and helping the poor and working in some kind of a cross-cultural context. And of course, the city is so different than the suburbs. It's like a different culture. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, he was in his 90s, and he had just stopped working. Mm-hmm. I said, Dad, if you had to summarize what the Bible is all about, what would it be? If I'm going to write a book, I want to know what the storyline is. Mm-hmm. And so he basically started talking, and I took notes for 2 hours, and I asked him questions. And he explained to me in, you know, 25 words or less what it really was all about, and then he would just fill in the details. And that's how it got started, and I thought I would just start writing and see what happened, realizing that I could stop at any time if this was going to be too hard. And as I started doing it, I would run it by various people from my church group and say, you know, how's this reading? Actually, I had to write, I had to decide to how to organize it. I decided to have an introduction paragraph or a chapter that explains what the Bible is about.
Okay.
Because I had three different kinds of audiences in mind. One was a Christian audience who were already familiar with the Bible, but I was feeling at that time, you know, with COVID coming on, and then Black Lives Matter was coming on, and the elections were coming on in 2020, everything, the whole world seemed to be falling apart. And I was listening to some Christians talk, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure they're reading the same book as I am.
Can I stop you for 1 second and ask you just a question? I'm just curious.
Sure.
What difference does Black Lives Matter make to you that you think that it's like the world coming to an end? I mean, what is it that, because people turned it into a beast. I mean, what is the problem?
Oh, no. No, I'm thinking it was, yeah, no, I can see how you'd think that way. It's just there was so much tension in the country, and it was about how we treat other people.
Yeah.
It was about justice. And I knew that the Bible had a lot of things to say about justice.
Okay.
And helping the poor and helping people who were not like you and loving everybody. And I was seeing things that were not just, and people not loving other people, regardless of the color of their skin or their sexual orientation or whatever. So there was just a lot of angst. You know, a president was very controversial,
mm-hmm.
And there was polarization.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like the world was coming to an end, but things were just really tense, especially with the pandemic.
Yeah, and they still are.
I know.
Yeah, that's the part, you know, when I ask the question on Sundays, when I'm speaking to the faith-based people, largely, I believe, then I'm asking them the question, what are they reading? Obviously not scripture.
Right.
Because it's not
that's
playing,
what I thought too.
Yeah, it's not playing out in the way they carry themselves at all.
I agree, and that was kind of one of my motivations, was to write for Christians so they could understand the book entirely and have a better understanding of it. Most Christians focus on the New Testament, and including myself. I didn't know the Old Testament that well. I had studied it a bit in college, but I really wanted to have a story that put it all together. And I think I thought of the Bible as a 5,000-piece puzzle. First of all, who would want to put together a 5,000-piece puzzle? And then you don't have a box. You don't have the picture on the box to know kind of what it looks like.
Exactly.
So I figured I want to have a 500-piece puzzle with a clear picture on the cover so people would understand what they were putting together. So that was my thinking process, thinking that for one, Christians weren't necessarily understanding the book the way I thought it was meant to be read.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I had a number of atheist friends who were, I was in conversations with, and we were always arguing about, you know, religion and Christianity and the Bible, and the things they were saying about the Bible were just really kooky. It was really clear that they did not know what they were talking about. I had one person say that, you know, I'll read your book when it's done, but, you know, I'm not going to believe anything that teaches pedophilia and slavery. I'm saying, what? It doesn't teach that. They said, well, you know, he gave me an example. You know, slavery occurred a number of times. Pedophilia was, you know, Lot got his daughters pregnant. I said, well, that happened, but that doesn't mean that the Bible's saying that's right.
Right.
And he said, well, if it's in the Bible, it must be teaching it. So I thought, man,
come on, seriously,
folks like
dude,
that, really?
Yeah.
And then there's other people who just are ignorant of the stories. Yeah, I mean, it's referred to all the time in the public press. I mean, whether it's David and Goliath or the Good Samaritan or the Prodigal Son, the Sermon on the Mount, there's so many things that people just don't know about. I mean, our public schools don't teach it. So where would you understand it? But yet it's the most read book of all time.
Right.
Although people, because it's so long, are kind of reading it selectively.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Or maybe they went to church and they had some Sunday school, but they didn't, you know, they just have bits and pieces and they don't really understand how it's all put together. Well, so I thought, well, I'll try.
Well, and you know, Peter, it's because it's complex and you're dealing with other cultures, other times, and, you know, they're so, because once you start in studies, that's what I like. The Old Testament, I hadn't read it for, you know, I heard about it and all this stuff growing up in Sunday school when Mama was a superintendent. I couldn't help it. But in church. But until I started studying it, because of a pastor I had at the time, that kind of kept us in it, I found it very intriguing and so much there to pull from. But it is a time-consuming thing to devote.
That's for sure. My wife went through a Bible study that took 7 years to get through it.
Oh, yes.
And I'm an impatient guy. I mean, patience is a virtue, but I'm impatient. I want to get stuff done. There's way too many things I want to do. And I'm also a slow reader, so I don't have time for a book that would be 2,000 pages long. I want to get to the point.
Yeah.
And I figure other people are busy, and they could be able to, you know, if they could read a book, like a 300-book novel, a 300-page novel, and be done in a month or even a weekend, and then they'd understand the whole story, its major characters. I thought, well, if they were interested in good literature, they should read it. They don't have to believe it, but they should at least know what it's about.
Well, and you know, and with that, some of that, you just need to do a visual in your head. For it to really sink in, and for you to learn something from. I don't think you can just do a speed read and say, boom, boom, I know it. I don't believe that, because some of it is meant for you to dwell on. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and spend some time in, and if you got to read the sentence 2 or 3 times, you know, to really get it, then that's what it takes. If our Bibles, to me, are considered as our life manuals, and we just can't go through. People won't have patience to read a driver's ed book to pass the driving test. So when something like this is important as teaching you how to live your life, you just can't speed read.
That's right.
Yeah, I can't.
And in fact, I mean, the concepts themselves are simple but hard. I mean, loving your enemies.
You're like, oh, please.
That's easy to understand, but, you know, really. You ponder that for a while, and then go to the scriptures to see what Jesus says about that, and who's your neighbor, and oh my goodness. So in a way, it's an easy read, but in a way, it's a life-changing read.
It totally is. Now, when we come back from the break, I love the fact that you call your overview essential overview, because really it is. It is what you say that you have titled this as section as, because it absolutely does go to the description, the whole everything. So I want you to start there, because I think that's a good place, because it's essential. It's the essential overview, and in order to understand the book, and I think that's a good idea, and you did good. And I have the nerve to judge, right? You did good, Peter. You did.
Thank you.
Okay.
Even my friends are surprised.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had it in you.
Oh my goodness! Today's book is the Short Bible, a chronological summary of the Old and New Testaments. Peter J. Bielsma is the author and today's guest, and I'm happy to have him on. He's a researcher and author. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance. WFSK's Artist of the Week feature puts the spotlight on smooth and contemporary jazz recording artists. This week, hear from jazz vocalist Nicole Henry. Enjoy hearing some of her prime cuts on the latest release entitled Time to Love Again. That's Artist of the Week on Thursdays during the noon hour on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Nashville's jazz station. Support for WFSK comes from the United Way of Greater Nashville. Don't pay to have your taxes filed. United Way's Vita-Free Tax Prep Program can help. Visit UnitedWayFileFree.com or call 211 to have your taxes filed in person or virtually by IRS-certified preparers. That's UnitedWayFileFree.com or 211.
Tiffany Haddish.
And I'm Marlon Wayans. African Americans are three times more likely to be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer than any other racial or ethnic group.
When you or someone you love is facing a pancreatic cancer diagnosis, access to cutting-edge treatment can help make long-term survival possible and improve future patient outcomes.
That's why Stand Up to Cancer and the Lust Garden Foundation have teamed up to bring over 30 pancreatic cancer clinical trials to those who need them.
Learning all you can about pancreatic cancer, including treatment options and what clinical trials are available, can give you or a loved one even more than hope. It can help make long-term survival possible.
For more information about the latest pancreatic cancer research and clinical trials near you, visit pancreaticcancercollective.org.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey! Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And if you're going to be out and about today, it's going to look warmer than it actually will end up being. 42 is our expected high, but we do have the benefit of the sun. But it's just going to be pretty, but it's not going to warm it up past 42. Tonight, 20. And back to work Monday, 49 for tomorrow's high. And then we start getting warmer, like Tuesday and everything. And Wednesday, we warm back up to the 60s, mid to mid-60s. And that's kind of where we are when the chances for rain roll in by Wednesday night. So in Nashville, we have sunny sky and 23 degrees, and that is cold. So think about that when you are going out today. Can't just wear sleeveless. Well, you can, but you know. All right, today's book is the Short Bible, a chronological summary of the Old and New Testaments. And Peter J. Bielsma is the author, and he has getting ready to go into, in the very beginning of the book, the essential overview, the basic facts about the Bible, is so essential that it, to me, it just really does bring it home as to why people have to understand the complexity. And then they can go further on into your book. So, Peter, tell the audience what they will find there, please.
Well, the essential overview is just what it says. Written for a person who doesn't understand the Bible, it has basic facts like how many books there are, who the authors are, what time period we're talking about, how the book is structured, the kind of literature that's in it. And then I talk about how the book was put together. It's 66 separate documents that were spread out over a 2,000-year period, mm-hmm. and it was thrown together in the 4th century by a group of white guys in Europe, and they decided, okay, these are the ones we're going to include. There are other documents out there that may be inspired, but they're not included in what we call the canon. So I basically provide a general overview of what the Bible is, because it's really not one book. Mm-hmm. It's 66 documents that are squished together in an odd way, and there's a lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. And then I talk about some of the main messages. You know, normally when you read a novel, you have to kind of discover these things, and maybe usually it comes out at the very end what the main point is and why the author maybe wrote the book. I wanted to do that up front so that people could see these themes as they appeared as they read the Bible. And I put the Bible in chronological order so it flows like a regular book. So I describe 13 different main themes that are in the book, and I think for a lot of people, it would be a surprise to realize that justice is a central message. Helping the poor, helping those in need are central messages throughout the Old and the New Testament. So they describe what those themes are. I have a section on how to interpret the Bible. I have a section on how God communicates with people. And discuss a little bit about what God is like. And then I just end with saying, okay, this is how the book is laid out. This is what's included. These are my suggestions on reading the book. You know, have a pen or a highlighter. And there's a lot of meat in here.
It is.
And
it is.
If you're going to read it once, you can read it, you know, in a month or so.
Yeah.
But you're going to need a highlighter and just...
Yeah, you are. You're right.
There's so much in there. Yeah. Think about what you might want to memorize.
Yeah. And you know something, too, Peter. I think in the United States, this is my opinion, that it seems as though people don't conceive the fact that, you know, the Bible was written in a different language. It wasn't written in English. And everybody wasn't... blonde and blue, blue eyes and blonde hair. Everybody, I mean, this could, and it wasn't what, because they can't really conceive of the time. How much do you emphasize the cultural aspect? Because I think that is really, really missing, as certain folks in this country seem to want to strike down culture and heritage so much. Do you point that out? I know you do in the essential overview, but do you see that throughout the rest of the book?
Absolutely. One cannot understand a story without understanding the context. Mm-hmm. And the Bible has an audience at that time where people understood the local context. Well, we're 2,000 years at least mm-hmm. separated from that, and it's a Middle East culture. It's an agrarian culture, and we're you know, we don't understand that. And so when I think that there are essential things missing because it was obvious to the readers at that time, but it's not obvious to us, mm-hmm. I explain it. So, for instance, there's a scripture that says, prepare ye the way the Lord, make the crooked straight and the rough places plain. Well, what does that mean? Well, what happened back then was that when a king or a ruler of an area was going to take a trip, he would send people out beforehand and make sure the road that he was going to travel was straight or as direct as possible, and that it was smooth because he was going to go on his chariot or something. And he didn't want to be bouncing around for a long time on a windy road. So that verse appears both in the Old and the New Testament. Mm-hmm. We don't understand what that means. Mm-hmm. But so I explain that kind of thing. There's 400 years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, mm-hmm. where all kinds of things changed in the world. The Greeks took over. The Romans took over. There are the divisions within the Jewish community with Sadducees and Pharisees and the Sanhedrin. And there's nothing in the book that explains those things because people already knew it at the time. They didn't feel like it needed to be explained. So I give a little background. The story of the prodigal son is really, there is so much depth and meat there because to us, it's a simple story. But in that culture, a man would never do that. He would never give his inheritance ahead of time. Mm-hmm. He would never run. It was really a story about a prodigal father. Mm-hmm. The word prodigal means extravagant. Mm-hmm. And whoever wrote the subtitles of these stories said it was the prodigal son. Well, yeah, the son was very lavish and wasteful. But what the father did, and the fact that he could spot him from a long way away, meant he was watching for his son to come back. He was waiting. He knew what he looked like from a long way away, and the story has that little detail, but unless we realize that culture would never do that, and that he ran. Men did not ever show their legs, and he ran to his son. This is totally abnormal. His son had embarrassed him by asking for the inheritance in advance. And then he's lavish. He has this big celebration for somebody who totally doesn't deserve it. That is extravagant. That is prodigal. And in the context of where that story appears in the Gospels, mm-hmm. it's all about a lavish, graceful, loving father. And so really, it's a prodigal father. Mm-hmm. And unless you understand that culture and how different that was, you don't really get the full meaning of the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you did your studies and you're preparing to write the book, I know you had to notice the precision in which some things were. It's like, Lord have mercy, you know, with the measurements and the precision. Do you have a thought on that? Because there's so much preciseness in the measurements and the tribe issues and such. It's unbelievable.
Well, I do have a perspective on that.
Okay.
And I think the Bible has a lot of detail that is not essential. And I think it also has a lot of things missing. I mentioned, you know, the history between, you know, the Old Testament, New Testament. There are a number of things missing because they figured people understood it. So I had to be thoughtful in what I was going to include and not include, and what I was going to add and why I would add it. And so if my goal was to get it down to just this really nice flowing story, and I had to exclude some things. For instance, the book of the book Kings and Judges. It goes on and on and on. It's a history lesson of the Israelites. Well, there was a main point in this. Like, most of these kings were bad. They didn't worship God. They didn't provide justice. There was a lot of fighting. I mean, there were 40 kings, 20 in the north and 20 in the south. And almost all of them were bad. And as a result of that, God took the blessing that God had given them away. And it's one of the consequences of not providing justice over a long period of time. And, you know, that message is something I think we need to hear today.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, when speaking of that, the part about the first and second Kings and that section of the Old Testament I like is that it tells you real clear that such and such was not a good king. Or, it's clear. It tells you, like, this, in other words, don't do the following things, because this is not good in the eyes of God, period. I mean, what else does somebody need in order to know that, because it's real clear. And when they did great things or positive things or things that were divinely ordered, then you saw a lot of times that the people prospered. And the people had such wonderful things. I'm like, do y'all need a flashing light and a roadmap? I mean, it's just so clear. But if you're not paying attention, you won't see the patterns. Because there are patterns.
That's right.
A bunch of them. When we come back from the break, Peter, as you can tell, I've studied just a tiny bit. Nothing compared to yours. But when we come back from the break, I want you to talk about the patterns that you saw, because you studied both Old and New Testaments, and the precision in which, and if you can tell us where in the Bible, or where in the book, and, you know, if you want to look it up, they can look it up in the scripture.
Okay.
Do you have your book there with you, right?
Actually, I do.
Good.
I figured you might refer to it. I better ready to study it a little
bit.
Because
I'm gonna call out some pages to you and ask you to tell us more. So it helps that I warn you in advance. Anyway, today's book is the Short Bible, a chronological summary of the Old and New Testaments. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Samora Penderhughes has a message.
I'm not trying to just sit at my piano and write music. I'm trying to say, how can I be most of use?
Next time on Jazz Night in America, the young composer, pianist, activist takes his transformation suite to his hometown of Berkeley, California. It's music, poetry, and a call to action. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from the Frist Art Museum, presenting On the Horizon, contemporary Cuban art from the Perez Art Museum, Miami, an exhibition that explores the diverse culture and political landscapes of Cuba and its diaspora through the paintings, photographs, sculptures, and videos of 50 artists of different generations, drawn from one of the largest public collections
exhibitions of Cuban art in the U.S. On the Horizon is on view through May 1st. The Frist is open Thursdays through Sundays, and you can find out more about all the exhibitions and programs at fristartmuseum.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at SAMHSA.gov/support. That's SAMHSA.gov/support.
We're all busy this time of year. There's back to school, football season, and this little thing around here called harvest. You don't have time to be sick or in the hospital. Did you know that the COVID Delta variant is more contagious than the common cold? And the doctors are seeing more young and healthy unvaccinated people in the hospital? Get informed about vaccines and make the decision that's right for you and the ones you love. Find out more at GetVaccineAnswers.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. The short Bible is today's book, a chronological summary of the Old and New Testaments. Peter J. Bielsma is the author, and he's a researcher and a traveler, well-traveled man. And before the break, I was asking you, Peter, about precision and also some things that you may have found were detailed. Because I know from my studies, God is immensely detail-oriented. And I'm like, I have got to respect that. And the details make the difference in the lives of so many and in our work and our everything that we do. What did you see in your and patterns that you saw in your work?
Well, I'm a detail guy, and so when I'm writing a short book, every word had to count. Mm-hmm. And so I had to be very careful to include things that were essential, to explain things that didn't have the detail, and take away the things that were so much detail but really not that important, mm-hmm. in my opinion, in the overall scheme of things. For instance, there are details. It's like a census, mm-hmm. or a genealogy. That is important to some people, but to understand the whole book, I didn't need to have it. Hmm. So I first had to come up with those main themes and figure out what's this book really all about. Hmm. And I was having in my mind a person who had never read the Bible. And so I wanted to just up front, in that essential overview, explain what the book is about, rather than wait for them to try to figure it out as they're reading a very, very long book. Hmm. And that way they could trace these themes. The first one is, and if you've read the Bible, these are all obvious. But if you haven't, these aren't obvious. The first one is obvious. There's the world has two planes of reality. There's what we can see, and there's a physical world, we can measure it. Mm-hmm. But there's also this invisible, supernatural, spiritual world that we can't really measure empirically. Mm-hmm. As a data scientist, I'm all into facts and measurement, but there are some things that you just can't measure that are important. Mm-hmm. Another common theme is that there's one true and supreme God, and that God has multiple forms, including somebody who actually walked the earth, mm-hmm. including a spirit form that kind of can get inside your head, inside your heart. Mm-hmm. There's life after physical death, and the quality of that life depends on God's decision about how you lived your life. That God is good, merciful, just, forgiving, loving, gracious. I think a lot of people think that, you know, God is some big ogre and is out to punish and has a bunch of rules. Well, I think that's a misunderstanding of what the book is all about. When I asked my dad, what is this book about? He talked about an incredible force of the universe that loves a creation and loves human beings especially and wants to have a loving relationship with them and is willing to go to great lengths to have that relationship, and that relationship is possible. That's really what it's all about. Another simple one is that, you know, good things happen when you're obedient and bad things happen when you're not.
That's true.
Now, the book of Job is a whole other story. I mean, I've got a separate section on Job, and I've had to really get into some of the details on that one, because at the very end, there's some details that totally transform my thinking about who wrote it and why the book was written.
And what was that? What was it at the end that made you feel that way?
You want me to spill the beans?
Yes, please.
Okay. People won't buy the book. I'll tell you. This blew my mind. Well, first of all, Job is not a literal person. It's a story about why bad things happen to good people. And at the beginning of the book, Job is this very wealthy person. And he has seven sons and three daughters. And through a series of events, everything that he had was taken away from him through a deal between the devil and God. And at the very end, spoiler alert, turn it off, turn it down if you don't want to hear this, lots and lots and lots of bad things happen, and Job is confronted with all kinds of false accusations about why these bad things happened to him, because obviously, you know, bad things only happen to bad people. Well, he was not a bad person. Eventually, this bet between God and the devil, God wins, and Job stays faithful. And everything he had lost, he got back. Guess what? He had twice as many animals as he had before. He had seven more sons and three daughters. He shared his inheritance equally with all 10 children. That was never done. Women never got anything.
No.
They never got anything.
No.
And the fact that, you know, and the only people, the only kids that are mentioned are his three daughters. So I'm thinking, you know, most of the writings at that time, there was an author's name given. There was no author's name. I believe that the author was a woman who is advocating for equal rights for women.
I accept it. I'll take it.
And the author says, these are the three most beautiful women in the whole land. I mean, he names them. They get an inheritance, and he names them. This is only a woman who could write this kind of a story.
That's true.
And so I have a little footnote in the section on Job, what I think about the author. People have traditionally thought it's a man, but I think there's overwhelming evidence. We don't know, but I think I'm quite sure. It was a very smart woman who wrote a story about women who suffer.
I'll take
way
that.
More
I'll
than
take it. I'll take it. Okay.
Yeah, so there were some details that were thrown in at the end of Job that were like a tip-off that, I get what's going on here.
Yeah, because you really have to pay attention. Because it does not...
And you have to know that culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's really one that requires patience and understanding. And I know we used to have a former pastor group. We had a group and we would have much discussion on then special books we read by C.S. Lewis and all kind of stuff. That was, you know, just very, very intense and detail-oriented. Well, I'll take that, Peter. Okay, on behalf of the women, I will accept it. It couldn't have been a woman that wrote that. Okay, I'll take it. We get nothing else out here, so I'll take that. Because women's names aren't mentioned culturally throughout the scripture. So, thank you for thinking of that.
There's a common theme running through the book, all the books about equal rights for women, too.
Okay.
And the way Jesus treated women was totally unusual.
Well, and they were they were there with him at the cross and made up his ministry and helped to fund some things in it.
And I named those people. I described those kind of things.
And, you know, the facts that, you know, so there is an overarching theme toward us, but most people don't teach that. They don't teach it and they don't discuss it. So, you know, if they did, maybe women will feel more valuable human beings instead of suffering with low self-esteem and image and all the things that we're plagued with. That's unfortunate. So they can find some renewal in their Bible. Now, on page 40, in chapter 4, the Israelites leave Egypt. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I had a book on, Ace, what did you say the title was? I think his last name was Bridgeforth.
That's correct.
What's the name of the book?
The Bible Timeline.
Oh, The Bible Timeline. It was good and interesting, and yours is as well.
The True Bible Timeline.
Yeah, The True Bible Timeline. He was analytical person and number cruncher style person, and in my opinion. And he said in his book he wrote, he did not think that the bondage was 400 years in being Hebrews in bondage. He didn't think that it was 400, that it was less time than that. When in your studies, and this Israelites leave Egypt, and in your book, do you cover the time frame, or is 400, you know, because I would think that some people culturally would have a problem with that.
Well, I don't know that I specifically talk about 400 years. I do talk about the story of how they got there in the first place, with Joseph being sold by his brothers to a caravan of, you know, other Arabic people who went down to Egypt. And they were there for a long time. We don't have all the details. I do have a timeline in the back of my book. It's the second appendix where I describe the times. And I can just, you know, I can whip over to see what I said for that, and just let me just see if I can add up the years. It probably was. The patriarchs was a period of about 600 years from Abraham to Joshua. Mm. So it may have been 400 years. I don't know. Mm. I don't know that's that important.
Yeah.
But I know that that entire time took about 600 years from the time that Abraham got to Canaan. He came 1,000 miles. Mm-hmm. You know, little details like, you know, he was in Ur and God told him to go to Canaan. Mm-hmm. Well, that was 1,000 miles, and it took him a couple of years.
Wow.
And he had to avoid all kinds of famines and, you know, wars and stuff. You know, it's not like it was an easy stroll down the road. He was leaving his home for good.
Yeah.
He was never coming back, and he never did.
In chapter 9, Peter, page 93, King David and King Solomon, flawed characters, lead during Israel's golden age. Tell us about that.
Well, Saul was the first king. The Jews wanted a king to be like everybody else. David ends up taking Saul's place. There's a great story about what David did to get famous. But David is still considered the greatest king among the Jews of all time. Of, you know, 3,000-4,000 years. But he plotted an assassination, you might say, and after he had an affair with a woman, Bathsheba. And he, that's a flawed character. Somebody who does those kind of things. He was a great guy, but he was also a flawed person. Saul was terribly flawed. Solomon was flawed also. He had he relaxed some of the restrictions that Moses had put in place, and so the book actually talks about some of these things, some of their flaws. They were famous. They were great kings, but like everybody in history, we're all flawed characters, and God can use flawed people
all the time.
We don't have to be perfect.
And who
we're forgiven.
I can hardly wait to interview the perfect person. I've been interviewing people for decades, and I can hardly wait. I mean, if it's someone out there listening to Sharon K today, and you feel that you are Mr. or Miss Perfect, would you please call me? I will give you my number, cell phone number off the air. And please call me. I'd like to take you to lunch. You know, I'm waiting for this person to materialize. so far, I hadn't seen him, Peter. And the thing about Solomon that scripturally was interesting is that at the time, wasn't he thought of as the wisest and the wealthiest?
Yes, he was the wealthiest king. He was the wisest king. Yeah. And he's still considered kind of that today. Some of his judgments, he really impressed the Queen of Sheba.
Yeah.
She gave him a whole bunch of gold because she was so impressed by him. So,
and he also had to be precise with the work he had to do in the temple.
Absolutely, it was laid out in a magnificent format. The sizes, it was an amazing place. It's not there anymore. Someday, they say, it's going to be rebuilt. We'll see. That brings us to the end of the book.
Yeah, it does. Well, and also, it lastly, before I go, what is your favorite that you can, you know, say when quickly was the favorite part that really stuck to you?
I think my favorite character is somebody who I'd never heard of before. Mm-hmm. His name was Jephthah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tragic story, but the way he was treated as a child, mm-hmm. he was an illegitimate child who ended up getting kicked out of his home, and he became kind of a criminal on the edge of the desert, mm-hmm. and he started a gang. But he was a mighty, he was well known for being a fierce warrior, and he ends up becoming a king. But then something happens with that deal that ends up tragically. And it makes me cry when I even think about it. So you just have to look up this guy, Jephthah. Starts with J-E-P-H, and then T-H after that. That story really moved me. I'd never heard the story before. It's not the kind of thing you would hear in Sunday school because it is so awful.
Yeah.
But he is one of my favorite characters. I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
And because I've worked with homeless people, people who whose background was very difficult. I have three adopted children. They all had difficulty. I got two of them were adopted at a later age after they had grown up in a very difficult living environment. And so I identify with people who struggle.
Yeah.
And
understood.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Now, here's what I want to do, because I didn't get to talk about the New Testament. And I just, you know, I like to talk about, you know, because I just barely brushed in there. If you don't mind, I want to call you back down the road.
That's fine.
And get the New Testament part, because we spent all of our time talking about the Old Testament. And we didn't get to talk about Jesus in here. So I did not want to leave this subject in the book without, you know, putting in the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So, Peter, if you don't mind, we're going to circle back with you, okay?
That'd be great.
Wonderful. Tell the audience where to find the book. And I saw on your website, your family has a foundation too, right?
That's right. So the short, www.shortbible.com is where you can find information about the book. I have a blog. I have some additional resources there, a study guide, a pronunciation guide. There's so many weird words, and people pronounce them wrong. And the foundation was set up because I figured this book is going to make a lot of money, but I didn't want the money. So I want 90% of anything I make on this is going to go into this private nonprofit foundation that will be used to help people in need, translate the book into other languages, and so the book can be, you know, spread around the world.
Beautiful.
So it's shortbible.com. More details there. How to buy the book. I must say that even, you know, I wrote this book for an adult audience because I wanted to include all the horrible details. The Bible, if it were a movie, would be rated R. And I've actually now written a shorter, simplified version that takes out some of this that's appropriate for children or people who are at least, you know, 10, 11 years old. Because the vocabulary in it, the sentence structure, I've written for decades for an adult audience, and I didn't realize until later that I need to have an even shorter Bible, and that's going to be used for an audio book in different languages, and so it's about ready to be released in Spanish, and there are other languages that will be translated into that, and then made into an audio book. So the foundation will be used to fund those kind of projects.
Okay, excellent. Well, Peter, this was very good conversation with you today. I enjoyed it very much.
And me too, Sharon.
I thank you, and I look forward to going over the New Testament with you next time I have you on, okay?
Okay, that'd be great.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. I'm going to leave you with Solomon's Proverbs 22 and 1. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. That's Proverbs 22, verse 1, a good name. You all and your good names out there, you have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411.